This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I am Freddie Bell, and coming up on the show this week, Dr. Nathan Chomolo is with us today, and we hear from AARP's Kate Schaefer, and she's here to talk about 50 over 50 nominations being open. Cassie Crandall is here with Lifestyles, and the Reverend James Stacy from Unity South Twin Cities has this week's lesson. All this and more on New Beginnings. And now welcome to our show, Kate Schaefer. She's AARP Minnesota's volunteer state president. And we're here to talk about 50 over 50. I'm well aware of 50 over 50, but what is it for folks who are just becoming acquainted with it? Welcome to the show, Kate.
Hi, Freddie. Thanks for having us on. So AARP Minnesota and Pollen Midwest, over the past 5 years, have honored 50 people over the age of 50 who are doing amazing work in our community and helping to make our communities strong. And so we are ready to select our next group of 50 over 50 for 2022.
When are the nominations closed? How much time do we have to get those nominations in to you?
So anytime between now and April 30th, people can nominate someone. And I tell you too, I mean, the people who are awarded this recognition are amazing people, but they're also people in our communities who are on the ground doing amazing work. And so it's also a chance to recognize people who maybe aren't given as much visibility for the important work they're doing.
Joining us today is Kate Schaefer. She's AARP Minnesota's volunteer state president. We're talking about 50 over 50 nominations. Who's eligible? Who should be nominated?
So the one thing is they need to be Minnesota residents. And so we have people coming from across our state. And we really do like the fact that we have nominees and recognitions in communities throughout the state of Minnesota. So they have to be Minnesota residents. They have to be 50 years and older. And so we also get people in a wide range of ages within that 50 and older group. And, you know, they come from a lot of walks of life. We have people who focus on community building. There's some public officials, educators, nonprofit leaders, healers, small business owners, artists. And then we also have a category, I'll tell you about the categories, but that we call the disruptors. So people who challenge the status quo.
So the people who challenge the status quo, give us an example.
Oh, you know, we have people who take ideas and make them happen. You know, we have a whole list of disruptors. And let me just, you know, I think about, you know, people like, well, Vanessa Tennyson is a wonderful example. She's a transgender woman who has been coaching people in leadership roles. And she brings all of the insights that come from being a transgender woman. Wookie Way is another great example. She works with Youth Prize, and that is an organization that gives youth voices and really helps lift up perspectives of youth in all the things that we do. And so, you know, we get people who are disrupting the way that we think about things. Another example is Duchess Harris. Duchess has written a number of books targeting young adults and children that look at diverse themes. And actually, some of her books have been banned by some of the more conservative states, including Texas, because they raise issues around race and culture. And so she's an amazing disruptor. She's a professor as well.
I would imagine that 50 over 50 would also look at community leaders as well.
Absolutely. And so, you know, we look at people who are working in volunteering, organizing, serving in public office. So, you know, these are people who help build strong communities. So we do have honorees in that category as well.
What do you have to do to submit a person's name for them to be considered by AARP?
We have made this a pretty simple process. So there's a website. It's 50over50mn.org, and we're using the number 50over50mn.org. And it's a pretty streamlined application process. So you just answer some questions and submit it, and then we have a selection committee that's made up of former honorees, as well as some folks from Pollen and AARP. And I, having served on that committee, I can tell you how difficult the process is. I mean, we have some amazing stories that have come out of this.
So once again, if you'd like to nominate someone, go to 50, that's 50over50mn.org. The nominations close April 30th. Do you have a final thought for our audience this morning, Kate?
You know, we didn't talk about some of our honorees are from the arts community.
Oh.
And I think, you know, we look at just the power of arts to connect us. I mean, all kinds of arts, musicians, performers, filmmakers, as well as the business community. And so we also want to honor entrepreneurs, business owners who are not only growing Minnesota's economy, but being good stewards. And then we also have some honorees in the nonprofit sector who, you know, we might ordinarily think about contributing to our communities, but we also look at just individuals, not just their organizations, but individuals who are making a difference in our communities.
That's a wonderful thing. Nominations close April 30th, 50, that's 50over50mn.org. Kate Schaffers, I can't thank you enough for sharing with us this morning and talking about the 50 over 50 nominations being open now through April 30th. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Freddie.
Let's turn our attention now to lifestyle. Here is Cassie Crandall with three things.
Thank you, Freddie. My thing number one this week, I have a pet peeve. Maybe you have the same pet peeve as I do. My big pet peeve is grocery carts in the parking lot. There are no spaces close by. I keep driving around and I finally find one. I'm so excited. And there it is, the shopping cart in the parking space. Now, if I have someone with me, it's great. They get out, move the shopping cart. We're golden. But typically I'm by myself when I go shopping. And so there it is, the shopping cart in my way. So I have to move on to the next available spot or wait for one. And then I'll go into the store to get my cart, and there aren't any carts available. Anyway, that's my pet peeve, shopping carts. All right, on to thing number two. My thing number two this week is about dogs, specifically our family's dog, but really she's my husband's dog. That's Lucy. Lucy is our 14-year-old yellow Labrador retriever. 14 years old. Did you know the average age of a Labrador retriever is 12? Let me tell you a little about Lucy. We adopted her from the Humane Society when she was 9. Now, being that she was 9, you know, we knew, all right, we're taking on an elderly dog and we want her last couple of years to be pleasant and that she's in a loving home and not sitting in a shelter somewhere. So anyway, we felt pretty good about the whole thing. And it was pretty amazing how well she got used to us and used to our other dog. And she seemed to not take very long to fit right in. And she was just adorable and so sweet. The years pass. As I said at the beginning, Lucy's 14 now. This dog keeps on going and she's truly amazing. We think that she may be nearing the end. We're having to experiment with different food, seeing what she'll eat or not eat. And that's hard. And it's hard to see her struggling a little bit now with her hips. But she still wags her tail. She still wants to go on walks. And she just keeps on ticking. Anyway, the moral of the story here is don't be afraid to adopt an elderly dog. And don't be afraid to look at the Humane Society for adoption options. So many people want a puppy or a younger dog because they're spunky and they're more fun and they like to play. But I'm telling you, these older dogs, they have a lot of life left in them. So don't rule them out. That's my thing number two. And last but not least, here's my thing number three. Have you ever been on a diet? I am not a very good dieter. I am the first to admit that. I don't think I've ever been on a successful diet, and I feel like I've always struggled a little bit with my weight. I enjoy food. I admit it. Do I always make good choices about what I'm eating? No, I really don't. But I try. In any case, it finally got to the point where I just couldn't stand myself anymore, and so decided to start a new diet. And here I am on day three, and I'm surviving. I wouldn't say that I'm miserable, but I started to realize something that I didn't realize before, just how much of my social life is based on food. And when we think about it, you know, we're going to meet someone for breakfast, we're going to meet someone for lunch, and we meet someone for dinner, or maybe drinks and appetizers. Food, food, food. Food is everywhere. So how do we get away from that? I started to think, okay, am I going to be able to see any of my friends in the next couple of weeks? Because I can't eat at a restaurant, at least right now. And so I started to think I need to rethink my social life and what it involves. Maybe I need to be thinking, hey, friend, let's meet up at the park and go for a walk. Let's go by one of the lakes and walk by the lake. Go over to the beach. I mean, I'd really like to be successful at this diet. I'd like to feel better about myself and feel like I look better in clothes. But it's a sacrifice. It's hard work. And it's emotional. It's draining. And I'm tired. And I'm not happy. But I try to keep my focus on the light at the end of the tunnel, that this is going to work. I'm going to lose that weight that I want to lose, and then I'll be happier. And maybe this will teach me more about portion control and choosing different activities for meeting up with friends. I don't know. What do you think? I'll follow up with you in a couple weeks, let you know how it's going. Dieting, it's my thing number three this week. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall.
Thanks so much, Cassie. We'll talk to you again next week. Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for being with us on New Beginnings. I came across a couple of things I wanted to share with you this week. Did you know that the hotel on the world's shortest street is up for sale? You want to get into the hotel business? Mackey's Hotel has been passed down through three generations of the same family for 67 years, and it's for sale. Located in the northernmost point of mainland Scotland, the hotel is situated on the world's shortest street, Ebenezer Place. The street has been recognized as such in the Guinness Book of World Records and goes on for a mere 6 feet and 9 inches. The hotel has 30 rooms and 6 apartments. And doctors should dress up. According to a survey, there was a study done that found that despite the casual appearance of their television counterparts, patients want their doctors to dress formally and not show up in blue jeans and sandals. Name badges, white coats, and dress shoes are preferable for both male and female doctors, the patients say in the study. And more than 1 in 3 patients surveyed say that sandals, clogs, and blue jeans were significantly undesirable in doctors of both genders. Here's study number 2. A survey found that both sexes find those who wear uniforms attractive. Lawyers, flight attendants, police officers, and doctors all have attractive jobs that, according to the 1,000 people surveyed, nurses were the top turn-on for men and firemen for women. Men in suits were also liked by 41% of women, well above the casual dress-down look. Well, it's wacky, but it's true. There was a television show that was so funny that a woman passed out. An Italian woman was rushed to the hospital after collapsing with laughter while watching a funny television show. The 63-year-old lady fell off her chair when she started laughing at a joke. She lost consciousness and was treated for shock. Doctors gave her some sedatives and are still wondering what was so funny. And I have 4 things for you that you probably didn't know yesterday. It's time to elevate your IQ. Are you ready? Well, people between the ages of 45 and 54, people between the ages of 45 and 54 are likely to suffer the Monday blues the most. And every day, 1% of the world's population visits a McDonald's. Point number 3. In the United States, Maine is the leading producer of toothpicks. And number 4, from start to finish, it takes 6 minutes to make a peep. That's 4 things you didn't know yesterday. And this from my news desk. Glad you're with us this weekend. This is New Beginnings.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
On New Beginnings, it's time to bring you up on what happened this week. President Biden is answering the call for even more weapons in the Ukraine. That country's leader has been pleading for help since Russia invaded. President Zelensky says the war would be over had he received what he'd asked for. President Biden has reportedly told former President Obama that he plans to seek re-election in 2024. The Hill cites 2 unnamed sources that underscores what Biden has suggested publicly. During a recent news briefing in Brussels, Biden told reporters he would be very fortunate to run against ex-President Trump again in 2024. Biden reportedly thinks he is the only top Democrat who could defeat Trump again. It's now up to the CDC to decide whether a travel mask mandate is needed. If it is, the Justice Department will appeal this week's ruling that ended the requirement on planes, trains, and buses. Several cities are still requiring masks in airports and on some transportation. More than 24 Republican governors are creating a strike force to secure the border. The leaders of Arizona and Texas revealed the new group aimed at stopping human and drug smuggling. Other states include Alaska, Florida, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, and Ohio. And people across the country celebrated marijuana on April 20th, the unofficial date known as Weed Day. The origins behind why the number 420 is important to people who use marijuana is not totally clear. However, Time magazine says the most credible story is that it started because a group of California high school students in the 70s would meet up every day at 420 to smoke. Regardless of how it started, the day is growing in popularity now that weed is legal in several states. Many dispensaries across the nation offered deals that day to commemorate 420. And the brother of former First Lady Michelle Obama is suing a Milwaukee school. Craig Robinson and his wife claim their two sons were expelled last year after they complained about racial discrimination. They call it retaliation. The parents say they submitted two reports that allege stereotypes in classroom assignments, but the school says the communication was disrespectful and demanding, adding that behavior won't be tolerated. And finally, Netflix is hoping to attract more subscribers by cutting costs. The streaming giant is exploring the option of cheaper plans with ads after losing 200,000 customers this year. The company says it has 222 million people paying for the service, but estimates 100 million are sharing accounts. A new feature is being tested in other countries where subscribers can add two people outside the home at lower prices, but no word when that will roll out. It happened this week. I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
There's a new report out this morning saying that actions need to be taken to move the needle on racial equity in Minnesota's Medicaid program. Joining us this morning is one of the authors of that report, Dr. Nathan Tremolo, who is the Medicaid director for the state of Minnesota. What needs to be happening in order to move that needle, Dr. Tremolo?
Good morning, Freddie. Great to be back on. Just clarification, medical director. You keep trying to get me promoted to director, happy to be here and talk about this report that I was proud to author. You know, we tried to ground it with some quotes, you know, starting with Martin Luther King Jr.'s, "Of all the forms of inequality, injustice in health is the most shocking and the most inhuman." As well as one from Dr. Evelyn Hammonds, who is a Harvard historian, who's noted that there's never been any period in American history where the health of blacks was equal to that of whites. Disparity is built into the system. And we lay out that it's well known that the system in Minnesota has not afforded the same opportunity to black Minnesotans and American Indians in particular. And this system has been built over hundreds of years in large part by policy that often don't explicitly use the words race or explicitly target black or American Indians or other marginalized groups, but when carried out and put into practice, were explicitly racist, like redlining of neighborhoods, or even thinking to policies that simply failed to use any measure of racial equity recently, like our initial response during the COVID pandemic around the location of and communication about testing resources. In fact, we cite the term Minnesota paradox, coined by University of Minnesota professor Samuel Myers, which describes how Minnesota can have some of the best outcomes for white Minnesotans, yet some of the largest gaps between white Minnesotans and black and American Indian communities. So with this report, it was our goal to not only lay out how structural racism in our system is the inequity that leads to racial disparities, but then to also work with our community to help prioritize the calls to action the report put forth.
So what needs to be done? You mentioned there are three or four specific areas that need to take place in order to turn this around.
Yeah. So when we look at our data, two things stand out. First, you know, Medicaid has a significant impact on access to care for black Minnesotans. Just over 41% of all Minnesotans who identify as black get their health care coverage through our Medicaid program. And when you look at our kids, nearly two-thirds receive their health care coverage through our Medicaid program. And we also recognize that our black community in Minnesota has very different backgrounds. So we looked at some of our health outcome data by country of birth, and we've consistently seen that compared to black Minnesotans born outside the country, those born in the U.S. have a higher prevalence of many chronic illnesses, You know, in analysis we cite in the report that found that the rates of asthma, depression, heart disease were all 3 times higher for black men and sons born in the U.S. than abroad. And so when you look at what the medical and public health and policy literature has shown and is increasingly demonstrating, as we did in this report, these two findings, that a significant number of black men and sons are on Medicaid and that those born in the U.S. have worse health outcomes, these two findings are tied to intergenerational legacies of slavery, Jim Crow, mass incarceration, and that it's not race driving these outcomes, but structural racism. And so that is why, you know, given these current and historical contexts, we focused specifically on the U.S.-born black community. And we met with leaders and members of the U.S.-born black community throughout the report process to help guide and inform the calls to action. Came away with three main ones: that we really need to improve racial equity and eligibility, enrollment, and renewal, mm-hmm. to help folks get access to care and who is eligible for care, that we should to improve equity and access to culturally relevant care. So do you, once you have that insurance card, can you actually get to your, you know, doctor or your provider? Does your provider have your shared lived experience? Are you at, do you have access to, you know, services like doulas, community health workers, others that, you know, work really with our community and in our community? And then the third was, we really need to improve our engagement with communities and families Medicaid serves, and really looking to have ongoing conversations. You know, the pandemic has really shown us that we've had this fractured trust between communities, medicine, government, and part of, you know, repairing that is really ongoing conversation.
We're talking with Dr. Nathan Chomolo. We're talking about the Medicaid program and racial equity in Minnesota's Medicaid program. You have a specialty in pediatrics. Is it concerning to you that 60% of children don't have adequate access to health care, black children?
Yeah, so I guess I would frame it as, you know, 64% is the number, you know, of black children get their coverage through Medicaid, which, you know, really gives us an opportunity to continue improving. You know, but you know, to the point you're making is that we know that folks who are on Medicaid, we've looked at that, our enrollees have told us over the years, have different outcomes when it comes to some of their quality care, have different outcomes when it comes to access to care. And so I think that is a concern because, you know, it, again, it's a legacy of, you know, historical and structural racism that we need to deal with. And, you know, we can't talk about health equity in Minnesota if we're not having Medicaid at the table because of that very fact.
So what can we do right now? Folks listening to you are citizens who are directly impacted by the findings that you're sharing with us this morning. What can we do as listeners? What can we do if people, as people who are participating in this program?
Yeah, so there's a few things that are in the Governor Tim Walz's budget right now that come from these and stem and align with these calls to action. And so looking at offering continuous stable Medicaid coverage for all children for 12 months at a time, which would bring Minnesota in line with most other states and improve, help improve that access to the care, as well as support for navigator organizations that play a critical role in helping Minnesotans access healthcare coverage. And that was repeatedly cited by black community members and leaders as helping them access and maintain care, as well as looking at approving funding to help with some of those community conversations and funding to our language around how we access doulas and how doulas get paid to make sure that more folks on our programs have access to doulas. And this is an ongoing, you know, process. So we put this report out. We're not just going to say all the work is done. We want to have ongoing community conversations.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we have some coming up in April 19th and on May 9th. And so you can check out the DHS, Minnesota DHS public participation website to sign up for those. Those are going to be virtual. We'll be going over, you know, more details of the report and then having some actual listening sessions, conversations with folks in DHS and leaders to continue to build upon this.
Do you have a final thought for our audience this morning? This is a hot topic. We'd like to learn more. What would you share with us in parting this morning?
Yeah, I think really driving home that this is a step towards where we want to be. This is not by any means the end goal here, and that we really are looking and hoping that folks can find time to, you know, either reach out to us at the DHS, reach out to your legislators, whether they be state, you know, there's counties have a role in this, your health plan providers have a role in this, and tell them what you are seeing and how we can continue to improve our programs and keep moving forward.
All right. Dr. Nathan Chomolo, can't thank you enough for being with us and sharing some important information with our audience this morning.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Freddie. You take care and have a good weekend.
You too.
Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151, 888-711-1151, or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Now let's turn our attention to your financial health in retirement. And with us is Leibel Sternbach. He is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. So let's pick up on the discussion where we started last week. We've had a really, really robust conversation about Social Security and the benefits, spousal benefits, individual benefits. And I want to ask you about this, about taking the maximum Social Security benefits that we can. Do I need to work in order to qualify for SS benefit, retirement benefits, sir?
So this question, I think, really trips people up. I don't know how many people I've spoken to who I'll talk to them about the retirement and they'll say, you know, yeah, I've got this, I've got that. And then I'll ask them about Social Security and they'll say, well, my benefit is whatever. And I'll say, what about your spouse? And they say, oh, they didn't work very much. They only worked for a few years and not a good paying job. So they're not going to get much in benefits or they don't qualify. Mm-hmm. And the truth is they do qualify. If you've been married, if you are married to someone who is eligible for Social Security, then you are entitled to Social Security spousal benefits. Just like alimony, if you got divorced, that the courts recognize the fact that you are supporting this person's work history, the Social Security Administration recognizes that effort, and there is a spousal benefit that you are entitled to. Similarly, if you've got divorced, if you are married and you were to someone for more than 10 years, and they qualify for Social Security benefits, even if they haven't filed for benefits, you can claim benefits on their work history. And that is something that belongs to you and cannot be taken away. So don't assume just because you didn't work that you do not qualify for benefits under someone else's work history.
That's really interesting. And that, now to me, that seems as if it is a hidden Social Security secret. So what about, okay, you talked about the spouse, you talked about working or not and getting the benefits. What about children? I've heard that children can get these kind of benefits as well. Is that really true or is that just a myth?
That is really true. And they, my siblings and my mother actually both benefited from that. My dad, you know, passed when he was 63. He claimed Social Security as early as he could because he knew he had a terminal illness. And he and my siblings who were under who were minors at the time, I think three of them qualified for benefits. And then their mother, as the, you know, the care provider, qualified for benefits. And they ended up getting a decent sized check for a number of years under Social Security. And so there are those benefits. You also have so minors are eligible for Social Security under your work history. But again, this is where that sneaky thing comes in. Due to the deemed filing rule, the Congress said the only way those kids are eligible for those benefits are if you are claiming Social Security. So if you are thinking that I'm going to delay my retirement benefits to age 70 because I want to get all of those deferred retirement benefits, well, you need to take into account all the years that your kids are going to be missing out on benefits and potentially not qualify for benefits when you hit age 70 because they're no longer minors and miss out on all those checks that you will not be able to get and will not get incorporated into your Social Security check. Those are lost benefits.
So, Leibel, so I'm understanding the benefits, but what about when I pass? Will my children still get benefits in my death?
They can. There is a survivor's benefit for children, and they can continue getting those Social Security benefits. So that is something that you definitely want to consider.
Wow, that's interesting. So is there an end date, or does it just go on in perpetuity, or does it stop when a child gets to be a certain age?
So it is for a minor dependent child. So there is an age cutoff that is, there are tests that will cut them off from those benefits. But until they hit those numbers, they will continue to receive those benefits. And again, this is one of those sneaky things where Congress comes in and they're like, okay, well, how do we save a few billion dollars? And they will change those rules on you.
That's really interesting. Lybel Sternbach with us this weekend. We're talking about maximizing your Social Security benefits. And I'm just curious, is it true that everybody gets the same amount of money if you've worked 10 years, if you've worked 30 years, that the person who's worked 30 years and I will get the same level of benefit?
That is a false statement. So the amount that you receive as Social Security benefits is based on the average of the highest 35 years of work history. So they take the top 35 years that you've worked, they adjust it for, they have an inflation index, so they adjust it your working years, because, you know, in the 70s, we had that hyperinflation, so you don't necessarily want the years prior to that to be included. That would bring your average way down. Mm-hmm. So they take that, they drop the five lowest years, and then you have that average is what is used for your primary insurance amount. And that is what your Social Security check will be based on. Now, you can reduce that or increase that by taking early Social Security or late Social Security. But it is based on your work history. There is a cap to that number. And there is kind of a minimum to that number. But if you earn, you know, too much, it's not going to make a difference. And if you earn, you know, way below the minimum or really just the minimum, you probably make the same as someone who made a little bit more than the minimum. But it is definitely based. This is not a welfare program. This is an entitlement program. This is something that you earned. So you paid into this. This is your government funded annuity, and that's really what it is. But because it's the government, it's not run like any other public annuity that you would get on the street. The rules are not the same. They can, you know, pilfer the coffers. They don't have to invest it according to any kind of mandate. It is not protected. But it is still, it is an insurance product that is managed by the government.
Really interesting. I have two questions, but I'll ask the secondary question first. So with that understanding, can I actually outlive my Social Security benefit that I'm getting?
So that is the great thing about Social Security. You cannot outlive the benefit. And by the way, the private version of that is called an annuity. The technical term for a payment for life is an annuity. And there are companies that will provide you private ones. And the Social Security is your public one that's government funded. A pension usually is also something that you cannot outlive. And that is the appeal of this, is that while your investments, you got to make sure to manage them properly so you don't outlive your assets. Your Social Security is something that will continue until the day you die, which is really great. And it will actually continue a little bit beyond that, which can get you into trouble if you spend that money.
Oh, my goodness. Lybel Sternbach with us this weekend. So you mentioned indirectly ways that your benefits can be impacted. I'm really thinking about how can these benefits be reduced other than starting Social Security early? Starting at age 63 as your father did, or when he passed away, or waiting until 75. How can they be reduced?
So another way that your benefits are reduced, and this is a little bit of a trick question, in that while your benefit is while your check is reduced, your benefit amount is not reduced, which seems weird to say. And what it is that if you are working prior to your full retirement age, then the Social Security Administration will reduce your benefit check by a proportionate amount. And you can look up what that is, but a proportionate amount based on what you work, based on the amount of you work and how much you're working. So your check may get reduced. However, that amount of money that they take off of your check will be added back in after you hit full retirement age. So it's not lost money, but it is, will reduce your check. So if you're thinking, I'm going to take early retirement, I'm going to have an extra $1,000 in my bank account every single month to spend on my expenses, which will let me cut back on hours of my job, the Social Security Administration may say, well, no, we're going to reduce that check even further, and you might not get that full benefit. So again, like I said, it's calculus that you're doing here. You're not just weighing one factor of what that check amount is. You got to weigh it in relationship to everything else that's going on in your life.
Interesting. So we're talking about ways that it can be reduced, that benefit that we're talking about with SS. So is Social Security taxable?
That is something that gets people upset.
I think I can anticipate the answer.
So we should call this show the hidden ways that the government takes away your money, because this is again one of those hidden things that that Congress put in there to reduce benefits. Right? They didn't want to say we're cutting Social Security because that doesn't sound good. That gets people to vote them out of office. Mm-hmm. So instead, what they did is we're reworking the tax code. And we're taxing, top earners and people who don't really need Social Security. And it gets lost in the, 80,000 pages that is the IRS tax code. And what they did is they said, if you are earning over a certain amount, then your Social Security becomes taxable income, which it shouldn't be taxable income because it was the taxes that you were paying to begin with. But basically, the answer is that up to 85% of your Social Security check can be taxable based on your taxable income. And it isn't a straight calculation of like, okay, well, I earned $20,000 a year this year based on my, investment income and my W-2. They've got an interesting calculation of what gets included in that, what doesn't get included in that, which is to your benefit, but it is not, again, it's not a simple formula that you can just, do on the back of a napkin and say, oh, well, I'm not going to have to pay taxes on Social Security, or I'm going to.
Libel, I understand, but that's not fair.
No, it is definitely not fair. You worked your entire life. You put this money into the system. It was it's supposed to be there for you when you retire. And then Congress makes all these promises. And what happens, right? They start reducing your benefits in ways that you don't even realize is happening. But anyone who's taking Social Security right now, well, all you have to do is look at what your costs were at the beginning of the year to the end of the year and how much you're spending in the grocery store to know that that check isn't going as far as it used to.
Wow. We've only got about a minute left, but here's the big question. Will Social Security still be around when it's time for me to retire? And should I be worried about this at this time?
There's nothing that you can do about it. So don't worry about it. If you're a millennial or if you're under 35, then you should, you might not want to maximize your Social Security savings. That's not something you want to do. But Social Security isn't going away anytime soon. They're going to keep reducing the benefits in these subtle ways.
All right. How can we get more information, Libel?
We've got a free report on my website that is yieldsforyou.com/resources. I've got a 5-minute Social Security maximization guide. I walk through all of this. I've got links to the relevant pages on the Social Security website, calculators, everything you need to know in order to make the most of your benefits.
Thank you, Libel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. His website is simply libelonfire.com. That's libelonfire.com. I'm Freddie Bell, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference, available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org. Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
And we turn our attention now to Unity South Twin Cities, where the Reverend James Stacy is the senior minister. They have services at 9 and at 10:30 a.m. each Sunday morning. Let's join Minister Stacy with a program already in progress.
Yes, Mr. Fillmore, these may be inspiring affirmations, but how can we put such ideas to practice in our daily life? Sometimes we are overwhelmed, perhaps like Mary was at the tomb, by the grandeur of the gospel accounts, even more so by the baffling thought of the slain human being rising from the dead, speaking to many, and then ascending from physical sight. How can we relate to such profound mystery? Well, if we reflect and look at what Jesus taught as he walked this earth, and sometimes a small gathering of his close disciples, other times multitudes of thousands, came to hear this inspired man teach them of God, of moral and ethical behavior. But perhaps most significantly, he came to teach them the truth that they are God's children, that they are related to their source, and that there is a power that will lead, guide, even raise them from what Charles called that tomb of materiality, thinking that we are bound by the problems of the earth and the challenges that we face. I was reflecting on that, and I guess like Mary, had my own little realizations of spirit active in my own life. For this is what Jesus wanted the people to know. To not focus and dwell upon him, but focus upon the goodness of God within and among. And so I reflected on something that had been disturbing me. And since this is not a time of true confessions, I won't go into the details other than to say I was feeling lost and hopeless concerning a certain situation. And then suddenly, as Mary recognized the risen one, something within me arose and challenged me. What is your truth? What is your faith? What is the conviction on which you stand? And I realized I could look at a difficulty I was facing, or I could look to a power that desires to work through me, healing, prospering, guiding. That ever-present life that Jesus so powerfully demonstrated to the extreme, raising his dead body back to life. And he told people that we have that power too. He said, quoting the Psalms, their traditional wisdom literature, he quoted, "Know ye not that ye are gods, sons and daughters of the Most High?" He challenged his people who had forgotten the power and the truth that is within them. Is that any different from our own days, my own life? We look at this world and all that we are told by others, and I won't pick on the media, but all the communication that brings forth to us differences, difficulties, violence, problems. And I think Charles might say, are you lost in that tomb of negativity? Are you willing to come forth from that tomb? Claim your truth, claim your power, claim what is possible for the true human being, created by a loving God, to grasp that power, to question yourself, as I did myself. What is my conviction? What is the foundation on which I stand? Is God good? Is God true? Is God an ever-present help in time of need? And so on this Easter Sunday, if the story of Jesus' resurrection, walking out of the tomb as you see pictured on your bulletin, seems like a distant story beyond your recognition, you don't have any feeling of connection with it, I encourage you, take some time, spend some time in quiet. Ask yourself, is there any tomb of negativity, fear, or doubt in which I find myself? And how can I walk out of that tomb? What do I believe is the greater power, death or life? Fear or courage? And an ending or an opportunity? Jesus walked this earth to demonstrate to people the God-given power within them. He made the ultimate demonstration, as the Fillmores called it. He rose from the dead.
Unity South Twin Cities, 7950 First Avenue South in Bloomington, Minnesota. You can join them each week either at 9 or at 10:30 a.m. and for their weekly activities as well.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com. In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference, available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
And today is National Take a Chance Day, encouraging us to break out of our comfort zone. Most of us have accomplished goals or dreams. What if this was the day to take the chance to make them happen? Even if it's just the first step toward that goal, it could be one step closer than before. For example, 20 years from now, you'd be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than by the ones you did. So throw off the bowline, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover, a quote by Mark Twain. If you're not certain where to start, polish up that resume, sign up for a foreign language class, or buy a pair of hiking shoes. Those are the first steps to taking chances on new jobs, traveling to a foreign country, or hiking on that trail. I hope you're following along. If you're ready for a bigger chance, buy that plane ticket or take your business plan to the bank. It's time to broaden those horizons on National Take a Chance Day. And here are today's words to the wise. Step out of your comfort zone. Today's words to the wise. Step out of your comfort zone. You can find more about words to the wise by visiting FreddieBell.com. Well, that's our show. Special thanks to all of our special guests, including Kate Schaefer from AARP Minnesota, Cassie Crandall with Lifestyle. Thank you so much for those wonderful tidbits. And Dr. Nathan Chomolo, thank you so much for being with us. That's it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for making us a part of your week. And for everyone who's been a part of this one, this is Freddie Bell saying goodbye for now, and that every day is a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.